Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. And your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories. On Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls _ Pep.
People have their opinion.
What other falsehoods are out there?
A lot of the perception things about us.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
Rebuilds are difficult. Sometimes it takes years and years. I still believe, given a really good offseason with this draft pick that we have coming and with our ability to get some veteran players in here alongside these young guys, we can make a substantial leap.
Kick back, relax. Locked On Bulls starts now.
My job is to prepare the child for the road, not the road for the child. And these guys are men.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls _ Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. The Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Drop your texts and your voicemails. We're taking both of those today on Mailbag. Matt, this is the first time we've been back in a few weeks. I know both of us have been kind of going back and forth doing solo episodes and stuff, but it's nice to jump back on and answer some of these mailbag questions. You guys continue to drop us all these voicemails and text messages, so we appreciate everybody that continues to listen into the dead period here in August. But we're inching our way closer and closer to training camp, so I'm excited. But how you doing, Matt? What's going on?
Jordan, what's up? Long time no talk. Really excited to be back on the mics with you. And summer's been kind of crazy. I'm really looking forward to training camp getting underway. In the meantime, you know, I'm jacked up about Bears preseason action. You know, we got another one on deck this weekend. We've got, I don't know about you, I've just now started to get ready for some of my fantasy football drafts that I've just completely ignored and looked at the calendar and was like, oh crap, it's the middle of August. I should start listening to some fantasy football podcasts. So with all of that, and we got, you know, baseball getting closer to the playoffs, you know, I know that it's been a tough year for your Sox, and my Cubbies are chugging along, probably only to disappoint me in the playoffs.
Yeah, I was just going to say, where does the Cubs rank in your attention, awareness?
Like now that football has started up, and even though it's only preseason, but we got all these training camp storylines, like, I'm not letting myself get sucked in. Like, yeah, you know, I'm gonna watch the Cubs finish out their season. Hopefully they'll win the division. Hopefully they'll make some noise in the playoffs. I doubt that they're going to the series this year. And now that the Bears, who have higher expectations than ever in recent memory, are getting things in full swing, it's like I could care less about the Cubs right now.
Yeah, after what happened last year too, just what was it, one game against the Brewers and they got knocked out after waiting all of that time?
Yeah, we played game 163 to determine the winner of the division and who went to the wild card game. The Cubs lost that game and then lost the wild card game. It was so stupid.
That's a tough way to go out, but I know Bulls fans here at least are hoping that that doesn't happen here coming into 2019 and 2020. Just looking at the schedule, we're going to touch on that on tomorrow's episode. We'll kind of go through some of the schedule, break it down a little bit more in detail. Just talk about, I want to really focus on the first 30 games, Matt, because I think that's going to be a stepping stone for this young team to just kind of see where they're at. When we watched the disastrous first 30 games of Fred Hoiberg's tenure last year before he got fired. So hopefully the Bulls get off to a better start. We'll talk more about that tomorrow. But let's just jump right into these voicemails. Again, you can hit us up at 331-979-1369. Drop us a call or a text message whenever you're listening to the show, wherever you're listening to the show. All right, let's get into these voicemails.
Hi, guys. This is Patrick. I'm just calling to talk quickly about Zach LaVine. I have an observation regarding his game that I think never really gets talked about when it comes down to his weaknesses. Now, we know basically over his career, we can point out that, hey, his defense has never been up to par. It's always been below average. Turnovers have been one of his Achilles heels as far as, issues that that hold him back from becoming a, you know, a true superstar per se. But there's another one that I've seen ever since I've watched him in Chicago, and that is his lack of a left hand on the offensive side of the ball. Like, if you notice, whenever he uses his left hand, he always jumps off the wrong leg. If you do a left hand layup, you are supposed to jump off your right leg to have the right balance. He always jumps off the wrong leg when going up for that left hand layup. And a lot of times when he goes left, he still tries to contort his body and his body positioning to shoot with his right hand. And with that said, I just see that as a real weakness, and I think he needs to work on that if he's going to become a true superstar. Let me know what you guys think. Thanks. Bye.
All right. Thanks for the call, Patrick. I'll be completely honest with you right now. I could care less what foot he comes off of, as long as the ball goes in the bucket. Like, honestly, I could care less. The dude probably knows more about his technique and the intricacies of where his body needs to be landing. And honestly, at the end of the day, put the ball in the hoop, right? Ball didn't go in the hoop. Ball needs to go
ball
in the hoop.
Ball didn't go in the hoop. Oh, there's a classic one. Look, I understand what Patrick's talking about, and he's not wrong when he's talking about the specific mechanics and, you know, when you're coming in for a layup on this side versus that side, this hand versus that hand, you jump off of this foot or that foot. Like, he's got all that correct, but I think I would agree with you in that I don't really care when these players who are the best athletes in the world playing at the highest level, if Zach wants to jump off of, you know, if Zach wants to jump off the top of his head and, you know, do a somersault on his way to the hoop. If he scores, he scores, and that's all I care about. Now, I will also say I think it is true that Zach has shown to be more dominant and more of a, you know, a high-quality ball handler when he is going right as opposed to going left. And maybe that's something that he can continue to work on in addition to continuing to work on, as Pat said, cutting down the turnovers, improving himself and his skills on the defensive end. But I also would make note that some of the best cuts we saw from anybody on the Bulls last season were LaVine making backdoor cuts and angled cuts from the left side of the court. So I think he can be very efficient playing off the ball from the left side and with his left. And, you know, if he is a right-handed player who's stronger going to his right than he is going to his left, then he is like many right-handed players. Obviously, the best of the best can go either hand. But that, I mean, I wouldn't put that near the top of my concerns. If you were to ask me, would I rather see Zach LaVine fix which foot he jumps off of when he drives left or become a better defender? I'm picking become a better defender 10 times out of 10.
Here's what I got for Zach LaVine. Don't mess up your ankle by trying to dunk the ball in a game that's meaningless and you already lost, aka the Magic game last year. Like, him going, remember when he went off that foot and then, like, re-irritated whatever he had done, rolled his ankle? Like, just let's stay healthy for me. Put the ball in the bucket and stay healthy, and I'm cool with.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, he got a pat on the butt from Boylan on that one, right?
Absolutely. But thanks for the call, Patrick. All right, let's get on to our next voicemail.
Yo, what's up, Jordan? What's up, Matt? This is Kevin here from New York. I just thought of an idea. I was listening to the Matt Solo show in regards to the schedule. About bringing it down to 65 games. First of all, I just want to say I agree. I think 82 games is enough. We've been doing 82 games for a long time, and I want to see more basketball. And that's like what we're paying for, whether we're watching it on TV or whether we're going to, you know, to games or buying merchandise, whatever. So anyway, but I also, this has to do with the draft lottery situation. And so when you were talking about it, I thought, well, you know what really sucks about the end of the season is that we don't get to see the teams that didn't make the playoffs, like, their seasons end. And obviously for us, that's been the Bulls. And it's disappointing because it's like, I want to keep watching the Bulls and everyone else gets to kind of play and, you know, go for a championship while we just kind of sit around and wait. But I thought, you know, Mark Schanowski has his idea about where after the All-Star break, the remaining eight teams play for, you know, draft position for the season, which I think is a good idea. But I just thought of this. So what if we had two playoffs? You have your top eight, which do what we've been doing. So then you have your bottom eight play in their own playoff series. And they play for draft position. So this would allow all 32 teams to continue. All 32 teams. 30 teams. Yeah. my bad. But anyway, it would let all teams have, like, a playoff season, right? And you'd have dual playoffs going at the same time. Because what always happens, you have to wait 3 or 4 days in between games when it gets towards the end. Imagine having each team having a playoff season, whether it's for the championship or if it's for the draft. It would also incentivize teams to not tank, which is, like, pretty much their number one issue right now. Because it would incentivize every single team to play good and to play as hard as they can. And it would give every single fan the opportunity to continue watching their team. So all the teams that maybe aren't doing well when they're rebuilding will still have time to play. So anyway, just thought of it. Just figured I'd share. Hope you guys are well. Go Bulls.
All right, thanks for the call, Kevin. So what Kevin's suggesting is let's start with the one he was talking about at the end there where like all the bottom eight teams play for draft seeding. The biggest problem I see here is what about guys that are impending free agents?
Yes.
Like, are you part of like the contract? Like, is that part of their contract that they have to play for that draft position? And honestly, guys that aren't signed or aren't relatively young, why would they care about where their draft position is, especially if they're going to go somewhere in a year
or
two?
Yeah, I mean, that was exactly my first thought as well, Jordan. Clearly, we're on the same page there. Because in a sense, I love the idea of essentially the NBA having their version of an NIT tournament while the NBA playoffs are going on, and that there are incentives to winning that NIT tournament being the 14 teams that didn't qualify for the playoffs are fighting for draft positioning as opposed to just a pointless, you know, banner that says NIT NBA Champions 2020. Because that would be, in my opinion, a cooler way to determine who gets what draft pick, because we all, especially at Bulls fans over the last couple of years, like we traded up to get the seventh pick. A lot of Bulls fans say like, oh, we've gotten the seventh pick 3 years in a row. Well, you know, one of those times it was not because we landed it in the draft lottery, but we have landed it in the draft lottery in back-to-back years. Bulls fans are sick of this. So it eliminates that as Kevin was saying, it would probably go a decent ways towards eliminating the whole tanking thing and teams shutting down at the back end of the year. If you have something to play for in that NIT NBA tournament and you're fighting for draft positioning, the teams, the coaches who are coming back, if their coach is under contract, the younger players who are on rookie deals and trying to, you know, build their teams up. Yeah, they would be the ones who are invested in that kind of idea. But as you said, impending free agents, veteran players who are saying, I don't give a crap what this team's draft pick is this upcoming year. I'm out of here. Like a prime example recently would be like if Kemba Walker knew he was walking as this season in the most recent season in Charlotte was winding down. In what world would Kemba Walker want to play in an NIT NBA playoff tournament to help the Hornets get a better draft pick if he knew he was out of there? So that's the part that to me doesn't make a lot of sense, because some of these players who have one foot out the door would say, what, our crappy team that didn't make the playoffs, and you know, we just played 82 games, and you want me to now play more basketball? Man, get the hell out of here.
Yeah. I like the idea, though, like the idea of there being an additional tournament besides the playoffs. I think that would draw more interest. And I would bet all my money right now that Adam Silver's got something up his sleeve. And it may not be in the next couple of years. It may take 5 or 10 years for this all to be implemented. But I think he's seriously like looking at leagues like the EPL and, you know, soccer overseas and how they're running their leagues and how teams get demoted. And you also have separate tournaments throughout the entire year. I think he's probably looking at that and looking at that pretty hard, because also factor in too, like regular season games. I know that the schedule kind of has gotten split up to the point where stars shouldn't have to sit as long as they have, like Kawhi sitting, what, 25 games of this season, splitting it up a little bit more, but maybe this tournament allows for fans who buy tickets to games or watch on TV be able to see their star play in the most important games, not just besides the playoffs, but maybe something happening around the All-Star break, maybe a little bit before then, but I can definitely see Adam Silver doing something probably in the near future with this tournament style and adding another layer of competition to this league.
Yeah, and I mean, here's another idea I just thought of. If you still want to do that NIT kind of thing where you have this, you know, draft positioning incentive tournament for teams that didn't make the playoffs, but you're wondering, you know, what vets would want to play in that when resting is already an issue and becoming a larger issue for veteran players and especially star players. What if you do that NIT kind of tournament for teams that didn't make the playoffs, and most of the teams that don't make the playoffs are young teams that have lots of guys, you know, on young rookie scale deals. And there's also a collection of G League players for that franchise. So maybe you build a spring NIT tournament roster between the young guys that are on their rookie deals on your roster and the two-way roster guys, the two-way contract players, and some of the best of the best of the G League. And those are players who have something to prove, would probably want to play to showcase their skills in a different way. This is a tournament. We can make, you know, I can make big plays and big moments and also basically just showcase my skills for, if not, I'm sticking around on this G League team, showcase my skills for, you know, a different NBA roster out there and maybe get called up. So that might work. And then those teams and those players would, you know, feel more of an incentive to go play in a tournament that the organizations are trying to win because it helps their draft positioning. I don't know. Like, I think that the younger players and the G League players would be more motivated to do something like that as opposed to the already established veterans and star players.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. You're getting warmer, but we're not fully there yet. And I think that's how the NBA feels right now, is like they have an idea of what they want to do. They just don't know what the right way is to implement this to kind of make everybody happy. But if you're going to implement something like this, especially a huge rule structure like this, you're going to upset or piss somebody off. And I wonder how maybe something like this is factored into the next CBA too, because like they're gonna have to consider the league making some kind of significant move like this. So I wonder if that's gonna be a part of their discussions as well, because I wonder if players would be interested in playing more games or eliminating some of those regular season games and instead playing a tournament over the course of like 10 days or 2 weeks. I wonder how that would go over with players. But we're getting warmer. I can definitely feel Adam Silver doing something. And it may not, like I said, it may not be in the next couple of years. But I can see 5-10 years down the road here having something implemented where the league shifts completely. But thanks for the call. That was an interesting topic to kind of think about. Let's wrap up with our last voicemail of the day, and then we'll get to some text messages.
Hey, what's up, guys? What's up, man? I just listened to the pod where somebody called in about a 60-game season. I'm so rich on that. I don't want a 60-game season. I kind of feel like they raised up the money keeps going up in the league and the players keep fucking complaining, and I don't like that. But season definitely needs to be shortened because I hate the wrestling shit. So I was listening to a podcast. I think it was the Bill Simmons podcast where he suggested like 76 or 75 in the middle. That's not a lot and not too many. That's less a decent amount. And that tournament was kind of off a little bit, but it should have been the 1-16 tournament, both conferences, best team comes. I would love that shit. And to add something on to like that tournament, like what Buddy was saying about the All-Star weekend, we can have like a little tournament right there. What he should have said, what type of tournament it should be. It should be a tournament for like, let's say 1-16, 16 teams come to the playoffs, and let's say 16 through 20, those four teams have a one-game playoff. Like, that's what I want to see more in the future. I don't know about you guys. Like, one-game playoffs are so fucking exciting, especially in the NBA. I remember that Timberwolves versus Denver one-game playoff to get in the playoffs. That game was lit. Let me get you guys' opinion.
So this might be a solution in terms of not necessarily a tournament, but maybe shaking up the playoffs, right? Going to the 1 through 16 seed. I feel like eventually this is what the playoffs are going to go to. Because if we have such a lopsided conference, although we did play through a huge lopsided conference already, and it kind of goes back and forth. But still, like, if these, I feel like it would be more parity, the games would be better, the matchups would be better if we went 1 through 16 as opposed to 8 on both sides. Because look at the Western Conference the last, what, 5, 7 years? How stacked it's been 1 through 8 as opposed to the East. I like this idea. I like going 1 through 16. I'm not going to go as far to say that I like the idea of playing a one-game play-in. I talk about this in baseball, too. I hate that one-game wild card. That one-game wild card sucks. It sucks ass. It's the worst. 162 games to play one game and you get knocked out. It would be the same here, playing 82 games to get knocked out after one game, especially if a guy gets hurt. What happens if a guy tweaks an ankle or can't play in one of those games? Make it a three-game series, I think I'm on board. But the one game, I get what you're saying, excitement, but I got to go three games. Make it a fair series. Don't cheat me like a lot of baseball's cheapened me over the last few years with some of these games.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't love the one game play in kind of like we've seen the NCAA tournament now. Not only do they expand from 32 to 64, but then they have, you know, these like last four teams in like single games. Like I believe there's four of them now. Where, like, you know, there are four games, eight teams, and the winner of those games get into the last spots in the 64, you know, team bracket. Just because it's like, well, let's keep adding more games because it's March Madness and everybody loves this stuff. I don't like that idea for the NBA, especially because to me, it's like the NBA is all about the ebb and flow and you know, the getting a lead or coming back from a deficit of the drama of a best of seven series. Some people think that like the first round should go back to best of five. And I'm like, hell no. Cause yeah, sometimes you'll get like a 4-0 sweep or a gentleman's 4-1 sweep, but sometimes you get epic seven game series in the first round. I mean, heck, the Clippers with really no stars, they trade away Blake Griffin. They trade away Tobias Harris. They still push the Warriors to six games in these playoffs, you know, earlier this year. So, I like the best of seven format that the NBA has from the first round all the way through the finals. I don't love the idea of adding the, you know, the one game play in for like the ninth seeds in each conference. But the, you know, 1 through 16, regardless of conference, is more interesting to me. In recent years, we have seen, you know, the Western Conference being so dominant. This most recent season, it actually, like, nobody got screwed in the West. Because OKC, San Antonio, and the Clippers were seeds 6, 7, and 8 with 49, 48, and 48 wins respectively. And then there was a big drop-off all the way down to the Kings, who finished the 9th seed at 39 wins. Whereas 6, 7, and 8 in the East, Brooklyn, Orlando, Detroit, 42, 42, 41. So no teams that got into the playoffs in the East, essentially, like, stole a playoff spot from a team in the West that would have gotten in the playoffs had they been an Eastern Conference team. You know, the 6, 7, and 8 seeds in the East did have fewer wins than the 6, 7, and 8 in the East. But unlike, I want to say it was a few years ago, I want to say it was Westbrook's MVP season when, like, the Thunder missed out on the playoffs as the 9th seed in the West and had a better record than two of the playoff teams in the East. So, like, when stuff like that happens, like, you know, what are the NBA playoffs without Westbrook? They're less exciting. You want Westbrook in there. So sometimes it does suck when you have that, you know, dichotomy between the East and the West. I guess the players and the league would find it difficult because of, especially, like, you know, say you get, like, a Boston Lakers matchup in round one or something because of the way that the seeds work out, and then those teams in a best-of-seven series, hypothetically, had to fly across the country like four times. That's the part that gets difficult. Other than that, and if they could find a way to make that less awful for the players and everybody on the teams traveling, I would be all for it.
Yeah, I feel like they're going to figure something out here because it can't continue going the way. Although the playoffs have been pretty good, man. Like, even the first-round games have been pretty good. So, like, I feel like we're complaining, and this is kind of like first world problems here. We're complaining even right. Though the playoffs have been amazing.
Orlando gave the eventual champion Raptors some troubles right. In the first round.
I mean, we had the Raptors go and win on a buzzer beater with Kawhi, and we had Damian Lillard end a series. Like, the playoffs have been good. I think we sit back and just kind of relax and enjoy this for right now. But I understand, like once LeBron leaves, once KD leaves out of the league, and you kind of have to think about that 5 years from now, the league is going to be a little bit different. So how do you reshape this for the younger guys? But interesting, I'm on board for the 1 through 16, though, going back to our call originally, but not on board for the one game play-in.
All right, Jordan, let's get to some of those texts. This one coming to us from Sam in the 630. I was listening to an NBA podcast. They were talking about Team USA using Thad Young for a lot of minutes against Greece because of how well he can guard Giannis. I was wondering if you could discuss this matchup for next season and whether he can add a lot of value guarding the premier small forwards in the NBA. So either Sam didn't get the message or this was an older text 3 days ago. Maybe he was texting us this before we got the official news. Thad Young did get cut from Team USA, but we can still address the question of Thad Young being a significant upgrade as far as not only guarding Giannis, but guarding some of those better combo forwards in the league. Jordan, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think this is partly why they brought him in, too. He can score and he can go on heaters, but the defense is part of the reason why they brought him in. He's a decent rebounder, too. I think that versatility between the three and the four kind of being at, what is he at? What is he, 6'8", 215, something like that? Being at that size, I think you're going to be able to guard most of those guys. And like, look, even if like Jim Boylan decides to play lineups like Thad Young, maybe you stick Markin at the five, or you have Carter playing out there at the five with him. You've got Otto and Thad there. Like, those are two pretty lengthy dudes and two dudes that know how to play defense and are pretty smart. So I'm optimistic about either one of those guys being able to handle any of the stars that come in when the Bulls face them. So, like, we still got a hole next to Zach LaVine, next to Otto Porter, so he's going to have to cover for him half the time. But maybe in lineups where Thomas Adoransky's playing, or maybe Chris Dunn figures it out and all of a sudden his defense comes back, one of the two, I don't know which one we have to wait longer for, but I think between Otto and Thad Young, depending on the matchup and how the guys are playing that night, will kind of depend. But I would say I'm optimistic because that is the one spot where you're going to get killed. Like, the Bulls got killed last year because they didn't have any wing depth. Otto kind of helped that out. So hopefully him and Thad Young can kind of switch off and be a little bit of an upgrade for Jim Boylan and his defense.
I mean, I'm right with you there. I think Thad Young is a guy who can, you know, score you some points. I think he's a solid passer for a guy his size, and he is pretty efficient when he goes to work down on the block. And the Bulls really haven't, and especially in the departure of Robin Lopez, the Bulls didn't really have anybody like that on their roster. So he is going to bring some things to the offensive end without pulling too much focus away from guys like Lowry and Zach. But I think just as much as... And, you know, of course, you're also getting, like, the veteran leadership in the locker room. He's, you know, a great chemistry guy, a glue guy that that everybody in the league loves. And, you know, the Pacers, just from what we've heard, were just devastated to lose Thaddeus Young. You know, obviously, contracts are contracts, and they couldn't afford to keep him, but they very much valued him. And on the defensive end, I think he's very versatile. You know, when you, and especially when you look at some of the teams in the East, you know, this Sam on the text line mentioned Giannis, but I'm also thinking about like Thaddeus Young trying to contain Blake Griffin and some of the other power forwards in the Eastern Conference, and like in the Bulls division specifically, in the Central Division, that they're going to be battling with, and Kevin Love as well in Cleveland. Like, he has that defensive versatility. He has the muscle on his frame, but he's also pretty nimble for a guy his size. I think he's going to open a lot of doors for what the Bulls can do defensively. Not only that, but also sometimes the Bulls could theoretically go really small and play like a lineup with Otto Porter alongside Thaddeus Young and like do that with like three guards, depending on what their opponents are throwing at them, and go really small in the front court because Thaddeus Young is that versatile on the defensive end.
I got a quote from Giannis from February 13th talking about Thaddeus Young. It says, Thaddeus Young is a great guy, first of all. This is coming from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Amazing player, amazing teammate, plays hard. When I get to the paint, three guys swarm at me. That's the only way. They've got to all work together to stop me from making plays, not getting points from making actual plays. But he's a great defensive guy. So Giannis gave him some props when they played back in February. So that's kind of good. I think the one thing to note is there's going to be a guy out there that can kind of command that defense now. Like, the Bulls didn't have that at all last year. Who's the commander on the defensive side of the ball? I mean, there's multiple guys to do it on the offensive side. Zach LaVine's kind of your initiator there. But you didn't have a veteran presence where they were telling you exactly where you needed to be, covering for spots, having a smart basketball IQ type of player out there. I think Thaddeus Young could be that guy. And regardless if he's coming off the bench or not, still, I think he's going to help maybe Wendell Carter Jr. kind of break out of his shell and have more of a voice. So I would hope that that's something that Thaddeus Young does too. But I think there's going to be a commander out there now on defense with him and hopefully Otto Porter too. We only saw him in 15 games, but hopefully this season he's a little bit more vocal
right.
as well.
And, you know, when you're talking about defensive leaders and this team, and, you know, it looks like they're not going to be able to find a trade partner for Dunn until maybe the deadline coming up next February. So he can, you know, guards can, as they say, set the tone defensively. And, you know, they can, you know, try and slow the, you know, opponent's transition offense down, get in front of guys, you know, get in some passing lanes. But, you know, as I remember, if I hearken back to a conversation, and I believe it was Bobby Portis, our old pal, who was talking about his relationship with Dunn and on the defensive end, what was, you know, being asked of people, and the fact that, you know, Dunn explained to Bobby in a way that, like, when you're playing front court and you know, you're anchoring that defense, you can see the entirety of the court and you can see all 10 players in a way that guards who are up, you know, playing perimeter defense cannot see everything. And so you got to be vocal and you got to be calling things out. Now, you know, Bobby was always a guy who wanted to try very hard. He was never very gifted on the defensive end, however. Thad Young can be that guy who could be the anchor of a defense when he's out there, who could be the vocal leader, who's calling out screens, who's doing this and that. I mean, especially considering how many times that we see Bulls guards just get absolutely leveled by screens last year. Stuff that's just like, you know, junior high level basketball. Like, call out your screens, give your opponents a little bit of a help, give them some heads up. Thad Young will absolutely help in that department.
Yeah, no, Robin Lopez could only do so much. Felt bad for the guy at times. And like, Robin Lopez isn't known to be like a dominant defender by any means or anything like that. So yeah, hopefully those additions kind of upgrade that defense now for Jim Boylan. Let's see. Let's go to this is from Mike's the 630. It says, I was wondering what you guys thought about any possibility Otto Porter Jr. coming back after his current deal expires. Said, I'd love to have him back, but his salary expectations might put a damper on that plan. Thanks for the time and love the podcast. So Mike's question about Otto, I know thinking about down the road, it's kind of hard to tell because we don't know if Otto can put together an entire season like he did in the 15 games when he came here. If he can do that, what kind of money do you think he's getting in 2 years? And does that depend on the CBA too? Like, with that kind of being in line there, there's whispers about a potential lockout if they can't come to an agreement. Do you think that's why guys are signing more? And what would Otto cost, too, on the open market if he plays as well as he did in the 15 games with the Bulls?
Well, so here's the extra wrinkle to this hypothetical. Because I think if Otto sticks around and opts into his, you know, final player option year to stay with the Bulls in 2021 for $28.5 million, which, you know, most people, instant reaction would say, well, why the hell would he not opt in? Because the guy's getting overpaid. Well, he's getting overpaid a little bit, but he's not getting overpaid a whole hell of a lot. And he's still fairly young. He still can make another big contract. In 2021, however, there are going to be a lot more big names on the free agent market again compared to Otto Porter Jr. So, and this is actually something I was just chatting with our pal C. Red Fred about the other day on a different podcast. He thinks that there's a decent chance that Otto opts out of that final player option year on his Bulls contract and hits the free agent market a year early in 2020 because the significantly weaker free agent class of 2020 could actually lead to Otto getting a fresh big payday because teams will see him as one of the best free agents available and overpay with the cap space that they have. So that could also happen. You know, Bulls fans are worried about, you know, are we going to have to overpay Otto to keep him if he turns out to be a really, you know, valuable integral piece of this roster? Does he want to stick around after his contract's up in 2 years? He might decide to opt out and hit the market next season.
Pull the Harrison Barnes, right? That's what Harrison Barnes did this year. He opted out his, what is, $23 million.
And the Kings somehow decided to give him more money in more years. Oh,
so, yeah, going to pull the – I could see that. I could see that, especially if Otto plays well. Kind of in line, too, if he has chemistry with Zach LaVine and Markkanen, too, and those guys are here long-term. I could see it, but, again, like, the Bulls are such asshats when it comes to contract negotiations with their own players, right? We know this from history, too. So that's the only thing that, I guess, concerns me a little bit, is having contract negotiations with your own players as opposed to anybody else. So we'll see. I guess we just don't have to worry about it for right now, but something to keep on our radar. You got one more you want to take?
Yeah. All right, let's finish up with this, Jordan. This comes to us from the 309. Something that's not getting any talk is this whole new idea of coaches being able to challenge ref calls or non-calls for something that most NBA players and coaches have hoped to have for years. No one's really talking about it. How do you think it will affect the game and also the speed of the game? Thanks for the question, Jordan. I have no idea. We've gotten used to NFL coaches' challenges over the years because it's been around for so long. You know, they've added a new wrinkle there, which we've seen in preseason, where coaches can challenge the non-call on a what they believe to be a defensive pass interference. And so there's always new rules getting added to NFL when it relates to coaches' challenges. But this is the first time ever that the NBA is introducing this. Because you've had officials' reviews where the refs can go and look at the replay to determine, you know, who touched the ball last and possession and that kind of stuff, reviewing flagrant ones versus flagrant twos. But now being able to challenge from an NBA coach, I have no idea what to expect. I'm hoping that it works out and that for the most part it does more good than harm, but I'm not confident that it will.
Yeah, and it looks like you can use the challenge at any part of the game, too. So you could save your challenge to the last 2 minutes where it is crucial, where you get a lot of those replays going on. It sounds like you do it right after the thing that you want to challenge, right after that play takes place, you call it, and it's like a timeout, and it's like a review for the refs. This kind of makes sense, though. I mean, the MLB is doing this. The NHL does this. The NFL does. It's time for the NBA to give their coaches a little bit more strategy to play with, I guess. But to me, I don't think this is going to have a huge impact. I think the only impact that it would have is, like, I could think back to the Boogie dunk late in one of their playoff games where they called it interference or something like that, and it didn't look like it was at first. And Steve Kerr at that point could have called this challenge, and that would have made things interesting.
That hilarious Kevin Durant play where he like ran out of bounds for 3 steps and then touched the ball and put it back in play, and somehow the refs like miss it entirely. Sometimes NBA refs miss some really egregious stuff. So, if you can eliminate those really awful, just like the refs are blind, not paying attention to stuff, then it could be good. But I, you know, as the texter mentioned, I do worry a little bit about it's just like slowing down the pace even more. And especially once you get down to those crunch time, the final couple minutes of the game, if it's a tight game, it's just like, you know, I don't want the game to slow down that much more than it already has with the ref, you know, the replay reviews.
I guess they tested this out in the G League last year too, and they did it in Summer League as well. I remember it a little bit in Summer League, but I would be curious to go back to the G League stats to see like how many calls were actually overturned, what was the percentage of it, when were they used too? Because there's got to be strategy to this too, the way that you use these challenges and at what point. I would assume right away that you would keep it to the fourth quarter, but maybe there's a play that's a turning point in the game and you need the points or you need the play or something like that. But this could maybe help out Draymond Green as well. I mean, you can challenge personal fouls called on your team. So Draymond Green getting hit with technicals or petty fouls. And this could help Wendell Carter Jr. out too. Remember all the bailout fouls that Carter got called or even just got called on him and he wasn't even near the play. This will be interesting, but I don't know if it's going to have a huge impact on anything. So I would say don't worry about it.
I would love them Right. I mean, I would love them in the situations of a player gets whistled for a foul and you go and look at the replay and you're like, that was a clean block, you know, got all ball. And then there's nothing you could do about that. That sucks. So if they can fix that, I'm cool with it. The you know, the flip side of it, I don't love as much, where like can a coach throw, you know, I don't think they're going to be actually throwing like red challenge flags, but can they challenge a non-call? You know, one of their players drives to the hoop and there's some kind of contact, but no call is made. Sometimes NBA refs just let the, you know, let a little bit of physicality exist in the game. You know, I don't want coaches, you know, throwing challenges out there to be like, oh, well, he drove and there was contact and he didn't get the call. To me, then you get in danger of becoming like, you know, like a pickup game at the Y, where it's like, you know, call your own fouls and then everybody's debating about whether or not it's a foul.
I'm with you on that. And the thing is here, it says is personal foul charge to their team, a called out of bounds violation, a goaltending violation, or a basket interference violation. No other calls may be challenged. So okay. It has to be a foul call.
So they can't challenge the lack of
correct.
A foul call.
So that could...
Okay. I like that better. Yeah.
To me, I'm with you, though, on the speed of the play, especially at the end of the game. Both teams have their challenges left, and then they use them. We already get all of the replays two in the final 2 minutes, so I wonder how that's going to affect it. I don't think it's going to be that much, though. So I say don't worry about it until maybe the Bulls are affected by this. But thanks for the text. Thanks for the voicemails. Appreciate it from every single person that's dropped us something over the last couple of weeks. We're inching closer and closer to actual basketball. We've got the FIBA World Cup starting on August 31st, so just a couple of weeks away from that. We'll have a few Bulls players in that tournament, so we'll keep our eyes on them. So but we'll actually have basketball, though, before the start of September, which is nice. Hit us up, though, 331-979-1369, the place to drop us voicemails and text messages. You can always hit us up on Twitter, too, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls_Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Make sure you're subscribed to Locked On Bulls wherever you get your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, anywhere you get your podcasts. I promise you Locked On Bulls will be there. So make sure you subscribe so you get our episodes as soon as they drop. And make sure you're subscribed to the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network. Fantastic shows going on right now, kicking off college football in just a few weeks. And also the NFL ramping up. So make sure you are subscribed to your favorite team so you get their episodes and you're locked in every single day of the week. For Matt Peckham, Jordan Malley, Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. Be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Oh, Stephen A., you gotta look out. Look out for what?
Hey, maybe I'll give you a call sometime. Your number's still 911? Alrighty then.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com